All right, welcome to this week's episode of Double I Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
Sam, is just after the close here, April 26th. We only got two more business days in April. Time's flying by. That means that we're also in crunch time in the English Premier League. We have a big North London derby on Sunday, Spurs versus Arsenal.
Yeah, that's, I guess, interesting for you. What'll be interesting for me is... I guess 2 days, business days left with the for the end of the month. But what that means is next week, middle of next week starts the month of Shmei for me.
As that's right.
It's my wife's birthday, and she likes to claim the entire month. So with that enthusiasm, let's see here. It's going to the into the markets here with the S&P 500 starting there. On a week-to-date basis, that's up. It's winning. I mean, it's up 2.7% on a week-to-date basis. Speaking a little bit too quickly right now for myself, but it's a clean sweep on a week-to-date basis as well across all 11 sectors underlying the index. With technology leading the way, up 3.8%. Consumer discretionary following very closely behind at a positive 3.7%. The laggards here are going to be healthcare and materials, both up less than 1 percentage point, with materials up 0.7%, and healthcare up three quarters of 1%. But again, a clean sweep. And really, I mean, taking a look across the news, you just couldn't avoid a number of buzzwords, I guess, for this week. But you know, the earnings season for the mega caps. A number of the technology-related names came out quite strongly, so that you saw quite a bit of a boost there, particularly in the technology sector.
Yeah, it was the first positive week on the month. So
that's right, that's right. It was a little bit of a surprise when I was looking at how far back we've had a positive week. But I guess, you know, we talk about weekly here, so shouldn't have been that much of a surprise. But as you mentioned, two business days left in the month, so I guess a little round out. Right now, the month-to-date return for the S&P 500 is still negative. It's almost a mirror return to the week-to-date. It's down 2.9% to the up 2.7 on the week-to-date. So, you know, I'm looking at today's return of 1% positive on the S&P 500. You just need, you know, it seems like if you have a couple more of these days, maybe it could eke out a positive return for the month-to-date basis. So we'll see. It's not entirely impossible. So. With that, on the year-to-date return, we have a 7.4% positive. For the most part, it looks like we have 9 sectors in the green still. Consumer discretionary down with a negative at 1.4%, and real estate down negative 8%. Everything else in the green, though. Moving over to fixed income, looks like pretty much across the board, yields were up. The two-year yield up the least, up 1 basis point on that yield. It closed with, let me see here, actually, with a slight round on the day at 5%. Looks like if you want some precision there, it's 4.9954. So give it the round, and it closed with at that 5% mark that we were talking about last week, Jeff, that it hadn't managed to close above it. It's on the line now, not even towing. It's right on the line there. So we'll continue to see. If it does breach that point, but basically that's the move that we had on the 2-year note, despite some of the things that we saw this week on the inflation numbers. But with that, we had a little bit of a bear steepener across the curve, with the 10-year Treasury yield up 4 basis points to close the week at 4.67% yield, and the bond up 7 basis points on the yield to close the week at a yield of 4.78. What this meant for the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is that was negative. Or let's just call it, we can call it flat. We'll call it flattish year, just closing with a slight negative, a few basis points here on the week-to-date basis. Overall, what dragged it down was the U.S. Treasury market, which was down 25 basis points on the week-to-date basis. The IG corporate credit market, the best performing sector within the traditional sectors within the ag, up 11 basis points, and MBS up 8 basis points. Just not enough to overcome that uh, that drag from the U.S. Treasury market, though. The other sectors that we cover here, all in the green, with the laggard here is going to be EM, up 10 basis points, and then followed by bank loans up 60 basis points and high yield up 80 basis points there. So outside of the U.S. Treasury market, a pretty decent week for the fixed income market, but that does not reflect so much in the ag, which is pretty much flat on the week. For the month-to-date basis, that's down 2.4%. Year-to-date, still down with the negative sign in front of a three-handle return. So moving over to commodities also flat on the week. Let's take a look here. On the month-to-date basis, it's positive 3.9%. Year-to-date, up 6%. Thus far, I mean, you know, some of the big names that we've been seeing in terms of driving some of the performance, commodities rather than names, but WTI front month crude oil futures are up almost 17% on a year-to-date basis. This week, it's up 60 basis points to close. Just shy of $84 $84 a barrel for WTI crude oil. Speaking of troy ounces, gold also up big on the year-to-date basis for front month futures. That's up almost 13%, albeit being down about 3% on the week-to-date basis there. But with that review of the markets, Jeff, do you want to kick us off on what happened in the macro front?
Yeah, we had a pretty busy week this week. On Tuesday, we did get the S&P Global Manufacturing PMI numbers, both the services and composite, or services and manufacturing. The manufacturing came in at 49.9, so back to contractionary space there. Was estimated to be a 52, so a pretty big miss there. The services number came in at 50.9, and that was also estimated to be 52. So that disappointed also. The composite came in at 50.9 also. So I would say not a big miss, but pretty significant misses there. We'll see whether the ISM numbers back those up when those come out, I believe next week. The big news actually was Thursday. Yesterday, we got the GDP numbers that came in at a 1.6. This is for the first quarter, a 1.6 annualized number. It was estimated to be 2.5. I think the GDP now, I think, was like a 2.7 number, so pretty big miss to the downside there. Mark Kimbrough wrote in the notes here that there were 69 estimates, economist estimates on Bloomberg, and the lowest estimate was one analyst had a 1.7. So every 100% of the people missed and were missed too high. We'll see whether revisions come through or not, or how this works out. But really, it was a pretty big miss. Still, obviously, still positive, so still good from that side. But really the slower growth there. And then also you got it's kind of confusing, but you get the PCE price quarterly index, and that came in at 3.7%. So, that's the inflation number that's embedded in GDP. So 3.7. So people were talking about higher prices, higher inflation, lower GDP as kind of the worst of both worlds there. And you kind of saw the 10-year yield move pretty substantially, and the 2-year go back up to closer to that 5% level yesterday. The 10-year rallied, 6 basis points, or the 10-year sold off 6 basis points on the news. And so pretty big moves there in terms of something that normally we look at the GDP and we're like, okay, as long as it's not going negative, as long as it's not going too positive, we don't really look at it too closely because it is a, quarterly number, a pretty lagged indicator. But this one was, because it was surprising, really came out and moved markets. We also got the jobless claims numbers yesterday. Notre jobless claims came in at 207,000, slightly below the 215,000 estimate. Continuing claims came in at 1.78 million, just below the 1.81 million number. So no movements there. It seems like those numbers have really flatlined. And, there's a little bit of noise up and down in both of those numbers on a week-to-week basis, but they've kind of settled in at these levels. And so unless we get a surprise to the upside or downside, those numbers kind of will just kind of keep moving along. Then this morning we did get personal income and personal spending. Eric wrote the note here for today, and he wrote America because income was up 0.5% and spending was up 0.8%. So as has been the case recently, spending more than we're making. That was estimated to be income came in on right expectation. Spending was 20 basis points higher than the estimate of 0.6%. And then usually this isn't really a very market moving event because we know kind of all the inputs into the PCE number, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, but that number did come out also this morning. The month over month PCE came in at 0.3, right on expectations. The year, that brought the year over year to 2.7%. It was expected to be 2.6. It's a little bit hotter than expectations there. And then the core PCE, the one that the Fed really looks at, this is kind of their preferred inflation gauge, came in at right on expectations, 0.3 again. But the year over year number rose to 2.8%. We kind of look into the details a little bit more here. Goods prices only increased 0.1%, while services increased 0.4% last month. And then also, you know, the so-called super core inflation, which the Fed doesn't talk about as much anymore. But that measure ticked up to a 3.5%. So continues to be very strong on that super core number. Whereas the core number is, you know, 2.8, the decline has been slowing. If you look at the Fed has also moved away from looking at these shorter term annualized inflation numbers. But the 3 month annualized core PCE is 4.4, 6 month annualized 3.0, and then longer term 9 month and 12 month, or 9 month is 2.7, and obviously the 12 month is 2.8. So no matter which way you kind of slice it and dice it, the inflation is not moving down to the extent where the Fed can feel comfortable that inflation is headed back down towards that 2% target. Speaking of the Fed, it's blackout week because we do have the Fed meeting on Wednesday. When we do get these blackout time periods, we like to look and see what Nick Timiraos of the Wall Street Journal writes about. And this morning he put out a piece that said, and I'll quote it, "Individual readings on growth and prices so far this year haven't been enough on their own to dramatically change the outlook for the Fed, but the cumulative effect of those serial disappointments has been notable." And that's end quote. So really, he's not saying, you know, there really hasn't been one data point that's been pretty market moving or looking at it and being like, okay, this is the one data point the Fed can point to and say, this is why we're cutting, or this is why we're kind of keeping rates where they are, higher for longer. But just because they're incrementally every single month been, you know, a little bit worse than expectations, certainly worse than the expectations that the market was having going into the year. Certainly that leads to the much more of a higher for longer outlook. And if you kind of look at the interest rate probabilities, we're looking at a 1.35 cuts now priced into 2024. That's down from 6 earlier this year. And we're kind of looking at it on a meeting by meeting basis, a 2.6% probability of a cut here on Wednesday. So pretty minimal probability there. And we don't get a rate cut fully priced into the market until December. So the November meeting is a 93% chance of a cut. So we don't have 100% chance of a cut until December. So pretty significant move there in terms of Fed funds futures pricing this year. Nothing out of the ordinary that we've seen so far, over the past couple of weeks. But really, that rate cutting cycle has been kept on pushed out. And now, you know, if we get some stronger inflation numbers or stronger labor numbers, we could see that get pushed out to no rate cuts this year, and not rate cut cycle not starting until 2025.
Yeah, I mean that the rate cuts probability matrix just keeps, as you mentioned, just keeps getting pushed out. It just feels a little bit reminiscent to the way people were thinking about recession going into, you know, 2022 and 2023 in particular. The idea that the recession was just around the corner just kept getting pushed out every, you know, out 3 to 6 months, it seemed like every quarter or so. So just kind of feeling a little bit that way with these Fed funds futures probabilities. But overall, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of a macro data that came out this week. And as you said, you know, the GDP print was a little bit of a surprise in terms of how much was attributed to it from a market perspective. But one of the things that started to rear up again in terms of a buzzword on the back of this GDP print was the word stagflation. This is something that you and I had talked about on a previous topic of the week, going back to September of 2021, based on a listener question that was asking if what we thought about stagflation, and if we were in a period of stagflation at the time. That episode was recorded on September, 17th, 2021. That's episode 33. And when I say it's a buzzword too, it's I did a quick search on how many emails I received this week on that had stagflation in it. And when I took a look at it, there was 10 of them this week. And I think 9 of them had the word stagflation in the title. And 7 of those 10 emails that came in on the week from external senders that had the word stagflation of it, 7 of those came in today alone. So I mean, this idea of, you know, slower to expected GDP on an annualized quarter over quarter basis, particularly one in that one handle, combined with some of these surprise beats that we've had with inflation prints across pretty much all the measures that we've been talking about, CPI, PPI, import and export prices as well, that have beaten to the upside, has people starting to think about stagflation again. So Jeff, you know, I know you thought, dude, it was a worthy topic to bring up again. I'm full agreement with you, given the number of emails that we've been seeing and then how much your people are probably going to start seeing it in the media. So you did a little bit more digging that might, you know, serve as a way to, you know, build upon the foundation that we tried to build back in that September 2021 episode on inflation. But why don't you kick us off on what you found here?
Yeah, and by digging, you mean just pulling up the information I had put together back there in September 2021? Yes.
That's a lot of digging. That's a lot of digging.
Well, so you know, really, you look at stagflation, it's like slow economic growth, high unemployment, and inflation, or falling GDP and inflation. So you don't necessarily need that high unemployment if GDP is negative. And so, you know, obviously today we have a GDP is 1.6, so we're not negative. It's still a positive number in front of it. We do have inflation, but, you know, as we mentioned, core PCE at 2.8%. It's not out of the world inflation. And we still have a pretty strong labor market. We'll see what happens, you know, when we get the non-farm payroll number on Friday. But thus far, a pretty strong labor market. So we're certainly not in a stagflationary environment now. It would take a pretty significant move there from the GDP to go negative from here, or inflation to kind of increase from here for that stagflation to take hold. So even though it is a buzzword and, you know, that's kind of a more clickbaity term out there, certainly we're not in that case yet. Obviously, it's something that is worrisome for markets and for market participants. But it is something that you really, you know, we're not at that point yet, but it's something to worry about there. You know, we kind of the perfect example of the stagflationary environment is in the 1970s, when the U.S. was in a recession. We had 5 quarters of negative GDP growth, very high inflation, and a lot of that was due to kind of the oil prices really driving that inflation higher. So with oil kind of flat here week over week at this 83 and change dollars per barrel, not really looking for oil as that catalyst to move inflation higher and cause more of a stagflationary environment. It was interesting. I wanted to look back and see kind of what GDP looked like and what inflation looked like back when we were talking about it in September of 21. And really that was, you know, kind of the impetus for the question. We did get a question from our listener, Tom, there, who's probably listening today, or maybe he's not listening today, but I know he continues to listen there to the podcast here. But back then, you know, looking at GDP, if you look at the third quarter of 2021 GDP, it was 3.3%. It did rise to 7. That was the knockout number in fourth quarter of 2021. Then we kind of did get those two negative quarters in the first and second quarter of 2022. And if you look at the inflation side of things, back then, the third quarter of 2021, we had core PCE was at 4% or 4.1%. We did go back up to 5.5 there in the first quarter of 2022, and then we come down to that 2.8 number today. So really, we didn't get in a recession there in 2022. You know, I guess people call it the technical recession, but you didn't get that labor, you didn't get that that spike in unemployment, which we've talked about many, many, many times. But really, it feels like it was much more of a buzzword then, and it seemed like that was much more of a reasonable outcome or a higher probability outcome back in 2021, because inflation was so high and people felt like it was going to go higher and it did go higher. But really today, when people are pricing in, the markets are pricing in inflation going lower from here, even if it is going lower slower than the Fed would like or the market would like, certainly that stagflationary environment seems a much lower probability today than it did, you know, two and a half years ago, Sam.
Yeah, and I think, where it becomes such a challenge, not only from an investment standpoint, is, certainly from a monetary policy perspective, that's challenging because when you think about the opposing forces that really drive the idea of the economy being in contraction or expansion, or the prices being inflationary, disinflationary, or deflationary, is that when you look at the traditional tools used by the Fed to fight a recession, economic recession, let's say, those tools are inherently inflationary, particularly when they're combined with the double barrel stimulus that we like to talk about from monetary policy as well as fiscal policy. And then conversely, when you take a look at it, tools to fight inflation, those are inherently, by the Fed, those are inherently contractionary for the economy. So you have two opposing forces, then the tools really drive it in the opposite ways there. So it does become a conundrum for the Federal Reserve. And I think, a lot of people think about stagflationary times, they start to think about, the mid to late 70s, when you had the stagnant economies combined with high inflation that were really driven at that time by, the oil crisis, the oil embargoes that were in place by OPEC during that period of time. So it is something that is, worth watching, but, I'm in agreement with you. I mean, at this point, it doesn't seem like it checks the box yet, the boxes yet for stagflation, but it doesn't mean that's not something that could be, in the future. And just really comes down to, what it has come down to for the last two or 3 years is just, what the Fed, how the Fed, policy shapes up. But I think there is a little bit of a danger of just trying to thread this needle of, of trying to get this, this perfect type of monetary policy through the rate, timing of the rate cuts, the size of the rate cuts, relative to not, trying to achieve this soft landing. It, perhaps it starts to put us, into this predicament of potentially reaching stagflation.
Yeah, and I wanted to also remind people that just because we went from a 4.9 GDP at the for the third quarter of last year to 3.9 in the fourth quarter to a 1.6, that doesn't mean that we're going negative GDP. It's just we're, the pace of growth is decelerating. Was not negative. People always same thing with inflation. When you have a we're at a 2.8 from a 2.9 last month or last quarter, doesn't mean that prices are going down. They're just going up at a slower rate. So people will I guess depending on what narrative you want to point out, you want to talk about prices are slowing or prices are. The rise in prices are slowing. You can kind of picture it both ways or post about it both ways. But really it's, we need that negative GDP to really get to that recession, to that get that the stag part of the stagflation kind of moniker.
Yeah, the stagnant combined with inflation. We were discussing this earlier. I think that's where I first learned of the word portmanteau, when basically you take the two separate words and combine them to form this hybrid word of stagflation. But hopefully, listeners found this useful. And again, if they want to build upon what we talked about today, they can look back to a previous episode for that. And, our communications team will go ahead and put the link in to our X account, I believe it's called, for to point them to that episode. But with that, let's move forward to what are some of the things that we're keeping an eye on next week. On Tuesday, April 30th, we've got the Employment Cost Index coming out, and that's expected to increase on a quarter-over-quarter basis, from 0.9% to 1.0%. And then on Tuesday, we also have the S&P CoreLogic Home Price Appreciation Index coming out. And from what we're seeing here on a month-over-month basis, is expected to continue to see a price appreciation in the housing market based on the 20-city index that's commonly cited there. And then on the year-over-year basis, that's expected to land out at about 6.7% positive over 6.6% the prior week. Also on that week, on the first day of May 1st, Wednesday, we have the ADP employment change data that precedes the payrolls data there. Effectively, ADP, as we've talked about in previous episodes, is trying to front-run the non-farm payrolls or the establishment survey there, while looking also at payrolls from a different perspective. I use the word front run because they did say in one of their methodologies saying that they are trying to, come up with accurate data that could effectively tie out to what the payrolls will data will be, but 2 days earlier. So with that, the estimate there is for positive growth of 180,000 new payrolls there or jobs. And then we also will have the jobs opening data from the JOLTS report, and that's expected to come in at 8.7 million, down slightly from 8.76 million. And then you were right, your intuition in terms of when the timing would be for the other PMI data would come out. And it is this week, starting first with Shmei First on Wednesday at the ISM Manufacturing, expected to be right on the fulcrum point of the seesaw at 50.0 for the manufacturing side, which means that I believe the 50 still means it's expansionary, but anything below that is contractionary. So maybe not right on the fulcrum there. And then also on Wednesday, the big mover for the week certainly will be the FOMC rate decision, where it's largely expected, as you mentioned, based on the interest rate probabilities, is that the Fed will remain unched on that with an upper bound of 5.5%, lower bound of 5.25%. And then on Friday.
Real quick, I think that the thing to keep an eye on there on the FOMC might be the tapering of the balance sheet unwind. That was, it's kind of been lost, but there was they started talking about or thinking about talking about it last Fed meeting. So we'll see whether they come up with a plan. I think I saw some estimates that said they would kind of announce something on May 1st to start in June was the plan. We'll see whether any sort of these shocks or the higher inflation has changed their thought process there. And also Wednesday, we do get the Treasury quarterly refunding announcement, which, normally we don't, this hasn't been too much of a market moving event, except if you look back on November 1st, that was, it happened the same day as the Fed meeting again, and that kind of started the so-called pivot that happened. So look for that as a potential market moving event pre-Fed.
That's right. That comes out pretty much at the beginning of the trading day, at the start of the trading day. So it comes out right there, and we'll see what kind of moves we see from the market at that point. But with regards to the QT, I believe the term, and that's a new buzz term, we'll see when it's defined. But Jerome Powell did say that the expectations for the slowing of QT to be, quote, fairly soon, unquote. So that's what it is. So that's just one meeting later. If that is true, then that's the definition of fairly soon, 6 weeks. So moving on to Friday, we will get both the establishment and the household jobs data. First Friday of every month means payroll day as well as Pizza Friday. So with that, we have the change in non-farm payrolls expected to come in at 250,000. Down from 303,000 the prior period. And then for the headline U3 unemployment rate, that's expected to stay flat at a level of 3.8%. And then finally, rounding out the ISM PMI data is the services component or the services index for that. And that's expected to increase to 52.0. from a level of 51.4, so remaining in expansionary territory for the services sector.
It sounds like it could potentially be a pretty busy week there, Sam.
Yeah, that's right. All eyes are going to be on Jay on Wednesday, I'm sure, to see what he's going to be thinking about. And we'll see if he uses the term stagflation or if one of the number of questions that come in, will be around stagflation, if that term will be used.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up. And I'd like to thank everyone for listening today.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for catching us out there on the Double I Minutes podcast here. You can hit us up on the X at D-Line Minutes, or go ahead and send us a old-fashioned email at minutes@doubleline.com. If you have any suggestions for future topics of the week, we'll be glad to entertain those. And also, if you have any questions or comments, just go ahead and send them through.
Yep, you can find old episodes on our website, doubleline.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/doubleline capital. Not much new out there, but a good time to catch up. Jeff Sherman's webcast or Ken Shinoda's Channel 11, also both good watches out there. So I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, and hope everyone has a great weekend.
Yeah, and then, of course, since it's
Fed week next Wednesday, we will have Jeffrey Gundlach and both Ken Shinoda on the television. I can't remember exactly what time, but Jeffrey will be on with on CNBC, and then Ken will be on Bloomberg. But yeah,
Ken's on at 1 p.m. Pacific, just after the close, and then also Jeff Sherman will be on TV, I think, Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, Thursday the 2nd at 8 a.m. Pacific.
Sounds great. So thanks, everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2023, Double Line Capital.